Right. Okay. So this evening we are looking at Shir HaShirim. Now I wanted to ask, you see there are 8 chapters in Shir HaShirim.
Sorry, do we need this on?
I thought it was different. Turn it off if you're hot. Put it down.
Anybody?
Put it down a bit.
There are 8 chapters in Shir HaShirim. We could take it slowly.
Yes.
And do it over a few sessions.
Yes, that would
yeah,
be
you'd
nice.
Prefer. Okay,
yes.
Fine.
That'd be lovely, yes.
Fine. So right now, so first of all comes the general concept of Shir HaShirim. It was discussed in the Talmud whether Shir HaShirim, you see, they were trying to work out what exactly is what's called in English the canon. The set of texts which are holy, the set of texts which are part of the Bible. And so there was a discussion among the rabbis, and some people wanted to suggest that Reshit with Pesach. But there's another custom, very widespread custom, on Friday afternoon as a preparation for Shabbat to sing or chant Shir HaShirim as well. And there we have the imagery of, again, of the six Sfirot of the week, with the seventh Sfira, the feminine of Shabbat, connecting together. Shabbat is seen also as a time for human beings to have marital intimacy. So it is this spiritual bonding. Now that's also another aspect of Shir HaShirim, that at the same time that we're speaking here about a spiritual unity, it also reflects back onto physical intimacy of human beings, of a husband and wife, because that relationship is based on the spiritual relationship in the divine. So there's a divine relationship for which human intimacy is only a metaphor, but then there is the reality of the divine relationship, which becomes a model for human intimacy as well, the kind of spirituality of human intimacy as well. So it works in both ways, in both worlds at the same time. So there we have Shir HaShirim Asher L'Shlomo, the Song of Songs by Shlomo, or relating to Shlomo, and Shlomo in this is Melech Shahashalom Shelo, the king who has peace, meaning God, that's in that sense. So it's a divine Shir HaShirim. Yishakeni mineshikot pihu, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Ki tovim dodecha miyayin, because your love is sweeter than wine. It's better. Your love is better than wine. Now the concept of a kiss is very often there in the Zohar and other places in Kabbalistic literature, Hasidic literature. Nishika is a connection, a spiritual connection. You see, what is happening in a kiss is the breath is connecting. And the breath is like the neshama, nishima. The neshama, the soul, the nishima, the breath. And so this is a variety of spiritual connection which is which has a very spiritual quality. It's a spiritual kind of link. And asking, saying that we should have these kisses from the divine, and the goodness of that love, that it's the love from the divine is more pleasant than wine. Now, what is so pleasant about wine? Yayin, what is the numerical value of yayin?
Seventy.
Now, that relates to the numerical value of another word, sod, secret. Samach, Vav, Dalet. Samach is 60, Vav is 6, Dalet is 4, is also 70. So Nichnas Yayin, when the wine enters, Yatza Sod, okay. The secret comes out. Now that can be seen in very conventional terms, that if you're trying to get a secret out of someone, you ply them with wine and eventually they'll tell you the secret. But in more spiritual, on another level, it is that the wine expresses the inner, the revelation of the inner secret. That there is a concealed esoteric dimension, and through the wine, this esoteric quality is revealed. Now, you see, we're talking here about the gilui, revelation and hiddenness. Incidentally, the very word Megillah means revealing. So there's a sense, we talk about this a lot with Megillat Esther. Esther is the represents concealment, and Megillat Esther is the revelation of the concealment. So although the term Megillat Shir HaShirim is not used so much, but nonetheless Shir HaShirim is in itself, the Song of Songs, is a revelation of something hidden which is going to be revealed. And so here, that love from God, which comes in the way of kisses, and the kisses are Torah teachings. The Torah which we get from God is the kiss that God is giving us. You see, there are different ways of bonding with God. There's learning, studying Torah. There's fulfilling mitzvot. And the mitzvot are an even more powerful bond with the divine, because the mitzvot can involve the whole person. For example, when it comes to Pesach, we will be eating, and the foods that we will be eating will be expressing a mitzvah, particularly the eating of matzah at the Seder night. That is a very powerful bond with the divine that we are entering into. And that's mitzvah, and then all the other things we do at the Seder table, the drinking of the four glasses of wine, which is a mitzvah midrabanan, a mitzvah from the sages. So all that is a kind of a bond with the divine. The kisses from the divine is like Torah teachings, which come to us and which have an illuminating quality to us. L'reach shmanecha tovim. The scent of your oils are good. Shemen turak shmecha. Your name is like oil which has been poured out. Al kein alamot ahivucha, and therefore the maidens love you. Now this idea of the scent, l'reach shmanecha, the scent of the oil, and shemen turak, and the actual oil. That's the scent of the oil, the fragrance, and the actual oil. And one of the ways this is, these two aspects are compared in Hasidic thought, is that the fragrance is like the mitzvot of the patriarchs. The patriarchs lived before the giving of the Torah. And yet, the sages tell us that they carried out mitzvot. So the mitzvot of the patriarchs are reichot. They are like fragrance. Aval anon, but we, says the Midrash, but we, shemen turak shemecha, your oil, your name, is real oil, because the mitzvot themselves are a tangible bond with the divine, like this fragrant oil. It's not just the fragrance of the oil, but it's the oil itself. And because there is such a bond with the divine through this powerful, fragrant oil of the mitzvot, al kein alamot ahavucha, therefore the maidens love you. Now what are the maidens? The maidens, you see, there are nashim, wives, pilagshim, concubines, and alamot. As it says, Shishim Hema Melachot, there are 60 queens, which are like wives of King Solomon. Ushmonim Pelagshim, and 80 concubines.
That's hard work.
Ve'alamot ein mispar. And maidens without number.
Without number.
Now what does that mean? It means different aspects of the Torah. Shishim Hema Melachot, the 60 queens, the 60 princesses. In the Talmud, there are, in the Mishnah, there are 60 tractates. These are the Masech. I think This is the Mishnah. The 60 is the Mishnah, and the 80 represents the Beraitot, which is another type of teaching, and the Alamot are the Halakot, like endless little sayings and teachings. It's a way of looking at Torah teaching. Torah teaching binds the Jew to God, so you have Mishnah, Beraita, and endless Alamot, endless maidens, which are the expressed in this saying and in that saying. And so this is the web whereby the person is bonded with God, scenting this fragrance of the divine and the kisses of the divine. And the point about the kisses is that the kissing opens up one's the heart of the two people who are kissing. So therefore the Torah comes from God to the individual, and the individual responds with love to those words of Torah and to the divine who is within those words of Torah.
So there are not actual women.
Everything can be interpreted in different ways. And one way of interpreting is that we're talking about the Shlomo in Shir HaShirim is a very handsome man, and therefore, because he's very fragrant and handsome, so therefore the maidens love him and they stand looking whenever he walks by and their heart skips a beat. One can give it that kind of prosaic explanation. However, we're looking here at Shir HaShirim as a Kabbalistic poem expressing the connection of the individual with the divine, or of the Jewish people with the divine, which is in a different way. So everything has gone. Yeah.
Where did we read that he had 1,000 women?
I think it was it's in scripture, isn't
it's
it?
It's in the Tanakh. It's in the Book of Kings.
Yeah, there is a mention of his various. Yeah.
He had so and so 100 wives, and then a greater number of concubines, and it added up to 1,000.
And many of them were Nochriot.
Yes.
Not Jews.
And yes. It's attributed that the Falashes are
from Queen Sheba.
Yeah, in fact, in the Midrash, on this week's Sedra, in Midrash Tanhuma, it talks about this. You see, the Sedra this week is about Tzorat, about leprosy. And so it speaks about a number of negative figures in Jewish history, Achav, Manasseh, kings who are in some way negative. And there are three negative kings. And then it says that it was thought that maybe there are four negative kings, and the fourth is King Solomon, because of what it says in Tanakh about his non-Jewish wives, and how they turned his mind, and they offered that to idolatry. It says in the Book of Kings. And then they said, no, this was rejected, as it were. There was a heavenly rejection to this suggestion, because he is Solomon, and the Midrash doesn't go into further explanation, but it's the idea of looking at him negatively is rejected. So one way of understanding why he has 1,000 wives is because he was the 15th generation from Abraham. And he thought, now the 15 is a very significant number in Jewish thought.
Is it?
Why?
I don't know.
Why is 15 a significant number?
50, 50, 50.
Well, no, 1 5.
1 5.
It was only 15th generation after Abraham?
Why? Because 15 represents the day of the full moon. The 15th day of the month.
Yes.
Middle of the month.
Yeah, the middle of the month when the moon is full.
I thought the 14th day would be.
No, at the fullest is the 15th.
Well, the fullest, yeah, generally, the way it's called. So the 5th, so the Ash. Sira ba'ashlamuta. Sera means the moon, the Ashlamuta, it's full. So when the moon is full, So then it represents a great revelation of the divine, and that was being expressed by the fact that he built the temple. He built the temple in Jerusalem. And the foreign wives that he took, it is as if each country sent a princess to be connected with this Jewish people, with their temple in Jerusalem. And the text in the Book of Kings, which describes the inauguration of the temple by Solomon, says that this is somehow, this is a universal religious center, and non-Jews will also come and will, and they'll pray to God, and God will bless them and respond to their prayer. In fact, he says that when the non-Jew comes, he asks God, please respond to their prayer, and if the Jew comes and prays, if the Jew is fitting, God should respond to their prayer. So there's a sort of more, the bar is higher for the Jew, whereas for the non-Jew, it's as if in order to help them appreciate the greatness of the divine, just coming to the temple will bring blessing to them when they pray to God.
There's also the interpretation that he married them for political reasons, to preserve peace with neighboring
countries. Well, you see, that's the other side of the messianic coin. You know, why does he marry them? He marries them because it is right that the king of the Jews in Jerusalem should be related to all the different kingdoms around the world, as it were, as an expression of the spirituality of godliness suffusing the whole of the planet. On the other hand, you could look at that in a more, material way, a political bond. Well, you see, there's a point where the political bond and the spiritual bond merge.
The idea that he was the wisest person, entity, where does it come from? Because we don't get it from the Tanakh.
Well, we do. It begins off. Shlomo is given the chance. He's God asks him, what do you want? Now he's become king. God asks him, what do you want? Do you want great wealth? Do you want long life? Do you want wisdom? I think those are the three choices. And he says, I want wisdom. So God says, you have chosen very well, and therefore I'll give you all three. Something like that. And then you have the story of the two women.
That's right.
The two women who are arguing together. They are two prostitutes, unfortunately. And one of them had a baby. They both had a baby. And one of them, during the night, she had rolled over onto her baby and killed it. God forbid. And then what she did was she picked up her dead baby, put it next to the other woman, and took the living baby from her and had it with her. And so now she's claiming, this is my baby. And the other woman knows, this dead baby is not mine. Mine is the living baby. And so they come to King Solomon to decide. And Solomon says, bring me a sword. What we'll do is we'll cut this baby in half, the living baby. So the woman, who is not the baby's mother, says, yes, that's right, do that, cut the baby in half. She's the one who lost her baby, and so she will be satisfied if the other woman also doesn't have a baby. And the mother, who was really the mother of the child, said, no, all right, in that case, if that's what you want to do, let her keep the baby. It's better the baby should live rather than be cut in half. So Solomon said, the mother who said, let the baby live, that is the true mother. And indeed she was, and all Israel saw his wisdom. You know, so that's where the image of wisdom comes from. And then it speaks about that he could speak to or understand. This is also in Tanakh, the language of the birds.
It's actually in the Tanakh. Really, I forgot that.
It's actually in the Tanakh. Yeah, so that's...
But I think during his time, the kingdom of Jerusalem, Israel, was at its peak.
Prosperous. Absolutely.
Yes.
And it was a unified kingdom after he...
A thousand wives, I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm.
How long was it?
Before the split, before the partition.
Yeah, because when he died, then came his son Rehavam, and the rebellion by Yeravam, and the splitting of the kingdom, which the Tanakh blames on bad advisors, or Rehavam listening to bad advisors. That's...
Well, they still do it, listening to bad advice.
Yes. Okay, so coming back to verse Dalet. Now this is a very beautiful verse. Moshcheni acharecha narutz. Would you like to say it, Millie? Verse Dalet.
Moshcheni acharecha narutza avieini hamelech hadarav nagila v'nismecha bach naskira dodecha miyayin meisharim ehevucha.
Do you want to translate?
Draw me, we will run after thee. Oh, well, I'm reading it. Is it all right?
Yeah, that's okay.
Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will find thy life more fragrant than wine. Sincerely do thy love.
Do they
love thee?
Right.
Do they love thee? Misha.
They love. Yeah, it's hard to translate. Meisharim ahevucha. Well, it's hard to express this. Meisharim ahevucha.
How would you translate meisharim? This is not...
Let's see what some of the traditional commentaries say.
Shaul, lech teshtergei meisharim.
Well, meisharim could be sincere people that love him.
See, Rashi says, Ahava Aza, Ahavat Mishur Bli Akiva or Chasim. A straight love.
Strong.
A love which does not have any.
Straight, yes.
It doesn't have anything crooked in it. It's a totally direct love.
Yeah, so that the word would be more, Meisharim, probably more straight, direct, than sincere, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Just see what someone else says.
The translation is a bit problematic.
And you will have it translated in so many different ways. Let
me read you this translation from Tzudat David.
Yeah.
They love him with propriety. I will not be put to shame because I run after your love so much. Because this does not stem merely from desire, because also because of your greatness and righteousness. So, in other words, the Jewish people are saying, this love that I have, it's meisharim. It's like it's from a long time back. It's deeply ingrained in us.
Yes.
So there's a wealth of commentary actually on that word meisharim. But let's begin at the beginning of the verse. Meisharim ahevucha is at the very end. Let's go back to the beginning. Moshcheni acharecha narutza.
Draw me.
Now, what's puzzling about this verse? Moshcheni acharecha narutza. Draw me, after you we will run. What's odd about that?
Well, if you pull someone, then they don't have to run after you. You are pulling the person, or whatever thing. It's
all right. Well, that's okay. The difference between what Millie is saying is the difference between Moshcheni, draw me, and then it's saying we will run after you, right? But there's another difference between Moshcheni and Acharecha Narutza. Narutza is we will run, and Mashcheni is in the singular. So it starts off in the singular and then it becomes plural.
That's right.
Right?
Narut, yes, that's right.
Now, one of the ways this is explained is as follows. The concept, this is a Chabad explanation, the concept that there is a divine soul within the person and an animal soul. Moshcheni, draw me, God draws me, meaning the part of me which is most receptive, the divine soul. It's the divine soul within the person that is listening out in some way for this connection with God. But when the divine soul is infused, it gets the animal soul involved as well. And then, Narutza, we will run. The whole person will run. The divine soul and the animal soul as well. And what happens? Well, you see, this is really relating to Pesach as well. Mashcheni, God takes us out of Egypt. And then, since he's taking us out of Egypt, which is what happens at Pesach, we now try to work on ourselves so that the whole person is involved with God. We're running after God, but the whole person, not only the divine soul, but the animal soul as well. That is represented by the 6 weeks, the 7 weeks in between going out of Egypt and coming to Matan Torah. Coming to Matan Torah, we count the Omer, Svirat Omer. And what we're trying to do then is sift through the different aspects, the 7 times 7 different aspects of the animal soul, to refine the animal soul, so the animal soul is also involved in this project to connect with God. And then we come to Mount Sinai. And coming to Mount Sinai, that is Heviyani HaMelech HaDarav. The king takes me into his bridal chamber. There is that unity of the people with God, that unique experience that everyone took part in at Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. So that's the whole series of the festival from Pesach to Shavuot, just in that verse. And even if you take it out of the context specifically of Pesach, counting the Omer and Shavuot, it is the step where godliness reaches towards the person. There is some kind of itaruta dila'ela, an arousal from above. You see, these are concepts which help us to understand the nature of divine service. And it's usually seen as a triple triple event. First of all, there is a reaching from above towards the person, coming from God. So there's some kind of spiritual input. Then there comes a response from the person below, coming back, like a response. So this is, one is called the arousal from above, and the other is the arousal from below. Arousal from below. And then, this generates a higher level of revelation from the divine, which is the arousal which comes after, as a response to the arousal from below. It's a itaruta dela'ela, it's an arousal from above, but it comes after the arousal from below. So we have the pure, first of all, just the arousal from above, and that also is like Pesach. We did virtually nothing. We were simply slaves, serving idols, like the Egyptians. And then, so God's comes to us and takes us out of Egypt, and then comes our response, the response from below, like the giving of the, like the counting of the Omer, and then we have the third level, which is this much higher revelation, which is like Matan Torah, the arousal from above, on a much higher level. Now actually this is part of our divine service all the time. Every day a person can experience this kind of thing. That there's something, or rather like a reminder, a flash which comes into a person's mind. There's a phrase in Shir HaShirim, I think, V'nozlim min Levanon, trickling down from the Lebanon. So the trickling down from the Lebanon is nozlim, the trickling from Lev Nun, the heart of Nun, of 50. Nun is the 50 gates of understanding. So from this exalted level of 50 gates of understanding, there is something trickling down into us. Now, what that means is that there's a part of our soul which is not trapped and limited by our ordinary frame. There's the frame of our body, our animal soul, our material concerns, physical concerns. And to a great extent, our neshama is trapped in that situation and severely limited. But there's part of our soul that's beyond. And that's the Levanon. That's this exalted dimension of the 50 gates of understanding. And what happens is that there's nozlim, there's a trickle which comes from this level of our soul. So there are little thoughts, good thoughts, that pop into our mind. Now that's the arousal from above. Then comes the question whether we're going to respond to them. And if we do respond to them, that is mashcheni. God is trying to draw us to Him. Okay, you know what? Acharecha narutza, I'm going to run after you. I wake up and I say, yes, God, I'm going to run after you. And then we come to Heviyani HaMelech Hadarav. The king takes me into his chamber. There is that fulfillment of the spiritual closeness between the individual and the divine. And as a result, Nagila v'nismacha bach, we will rejoice and be happy, Bach. Now Bach is Kaf Bet Otiyot HaTorah, Otiyot HaAlef Bet, the 22 letters of the Aleph Bet, which are the 22 represents the... Hi. Yes, that's wonderful. No problem. What did I do with those texts? We have some.
No matter for the late comers.
Yeah, no, you'll get matzah. You'll get matzah.
Why? Why don't you start again, Tammy?
You'll have to listen to it online. Hopefully, it'll work.
I don't mind if it finished. I don't mind if it 10 seconds. But I want to ask many times. I'm nodding.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry.
We're just looking at verse 4. So Moshcheini, God draws us. There's something that comes from the divine towards us. Here, Nigel. Here's the image, the picture of this, like this. Red arrow is like this illumination, this moment of illumination coming from God to the individual. And then, Acharecha Narutza, we will run after you. As a result of this turn towards us, we are going to respond, our response. And the effect of that is, Heviyani HaMelech HaDarav, the king takes me into his chamber, his chambers, his bridal chambers, this intimate closeness. You see, we are like the woman who is coming to the king. That's God, the infinite king, and us as the one who is bonding with God. And we come into the bridal chamber. Nagila v'nisva chabach, we will rejoice, we will be happy. Bach literally means with you. We will rejoice with you. But the sages tell us in the Midrash that Bach here means 22, Kafbet, 22. the 22 letters of the alphabet, and the 22 letters of the alphabet are the alphabet in which the Torah is written. All the different aspects of the Torah are written in the 22 letters. So that is what we're going to rejoice in, because what the effluent, you see, the flow that comes from the divine to the individual is Torah. The kisses that it speaks about in verse 2, this is the kisses of Torah. And this is the tremendous joy of the individual, that all the time there are these words of Torah and ideas of Torah and a story of Torah and the Seder which is being read from the Torah scroll. This is something which God is giving to us all the time, and it's just the most incredible experience that we have this joyfulness, this joyful bond with the divine at every step of our existence. Naskira dodecha miyayin. We will remember your love more than wine. Meisharim avucha. We love you in a total way. We discussed before a little bit, lots of different explanations. What does it mean, meisharim? But it's a total love. It's a bonding with love in a most beautiful, beautiful way. All right, so those are the first four verses, and you see there's a pei, which means there's a space in the actual text. Ptucha means the line is open, and then it's like the paragraph end. So here what we have in these first four lines is this connection of the Jewish people to the divine, or the individual to the divine. That's the way Song of Songs is interpreted. And it's a Song of Songs. It's on a very high level. There are different levels of song. And the nature of song is going from one level to another. Kol Baalei HaShir Yotzeim B'Shir. All those which have a song are able to go out with that song from one level to another, which is reinterpreting a Mishnah from Shabbat about a completely different context, but everything it can be reread in a different way. And we have the kisses from God to us, which are the closeness, the Torah, beautiful Torah teachings, and the way there is this sense of this fragrance and the different dimensions of that fragrance. There's the fragrance which are the mitzvot of the patriarchs before the Torah was given, and then there's the oil, the fragrant oil. It's not just the fragrance, but it's the actual fragrant oil which is poured out. That is the reality of doing a mitzvah. Doing any mitzvah is an incredible ecstatic bond with God. And therefore, alamot ahivucha, the maidens love you. It's as if there are all different aspects within us. One might say that there is the princess, there's the concubine, and there's the maiden who doesn't actually have a look in, but she's there's the princess who is really like the queen. And then there is the concubine who also has a real relationship with the king. And then there's the maidens for whom the king is just a wonderful, wonderful person, and they just look at him and it's really looking from afar. And there are all these different dimensions within us. There's the princess part of us which bonds with God. There's the concubine which not in such a total way. And then there's the maiden, the shy maiden looking up.
I have a question. There are several words that you mentioned have a meaning because of the way they were structured. What do you call it? Numerology? No.
Gematria,
like the word Bach. Are there many words in here that have got a meaning just by the construction of the actual letters?
Could be. I mean, to count it up, but that's always a possibility in any verse, that the explanation, one level or some levels of the explanation of that verse might be in terms of the gematria of the word. Yes. We looked at Yayin. You see the whole idea of wine. Your love is sweeter than wine. Your love is better than wine. So wine has the numerical value 70, and sod, secret, has numerical value 70. And we're talking here about a kind of an intimacy in which that which is hidden becomes revealed. It's, so the secret dimension, both of the secret of the individual and the secret of God, are revealed together. And that's what intimacy is. But here we're talking about intimacy in terms of the individual and the divine. Okay, now let's take it a little bit further. So now we come to the sort of second paragraph, which is another set of four verses, right? Would you like to read, Saul, Shohani?
Shohani benava benot Yerushalayim, ki oale kedar ki ilrot Shlomo. I am black, but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon.
Right, okay.
This is such an obscure, there is a song.
Well, almost all of this, every verse has been made by one group or another into a refrain. If we had the copyright. Now, Shchoan le'anivanava, I mean, this is actually carried through into the next verse. Nigel, do you want to read it either in Hebrew or in English, verse 6?
Look not upon me, as I am swarthy, that the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons are incensed against me. They made me keeper of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard have I not kept.
Right. Al tiruni shanishcha choret. Don't look at me, I'm so dark. The sun has tanned me, has made me dark. Now, this darkness is an interesting concept.
Yes, but yes, exactly. I was all thinking, Shchorani v'nava, I'm black and yet I'm lovely. Nava is lovely. The translation here is comely. What does it mean?
Comely means beautiful.
Does it?
Yeah, comely. It is a word. It's not something you normally will find in the newspaper, but it's nonetheless.
Okay.
Yeah, it means beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. The question is whether it's I'm black, but I'm beautiful, or I'm black and thus I'm beautiful.
Chorani venava, I am black and I'm lovely and I'm beautiful. Venava. That's the translation, isn't it?
Yeah, but do you mean, even though I'm black, I'm beautiful? Or is black beautiful itself? Black is beautiful.
Well, I would have said that, but the next paragraph,
Atir
unishani shcharchoret,
that implies there's something
It's like negative. Something not right. It's not correct.
Yeah, and the idea being...
apologizing, it's because of the sun.
Well, the idea being in verse 6, that why is she so dark? Because she has been made to work. She's on a lower social level. She's been made to work in the sun. And because she works in the sun, guarding the vineyard, or doing something in the vineyard, so because of that, she's tanned very dark. And so the being dark implies a sort of more menial kind of work. Whereas if she sat inside the tent and, did different kinds of things, then she wouldn't be so dark.
And who is she?
Well, she is us. She is Israel and she is the individual. And
who are the Bnei Imi Nacharubi Samuni Notera? Who are those?
Right, so there we have these sort of, I mean, first of all, there are the Benot Yerushalayim. You see, there's the Benot Yerushalayim, the daughters of Jerusalem, whom she's speaking to in the context of Song of Songs. She speaks, she gives advice, pieces of advice that she gives to the daughters of Jerusalem, which in a sense is also us. You know, you've got the Shulamit, she's sometimes called the Shulamit. So you've got the Shulamit, speaking and giving advice to the daughters of Jerusalem, who collectively also are the Jewish people. You know, so it's like different levels. But then you have also these brothers, these Bnei Imi Nicharuvi, those who rejected her in some way and made her work in the vineyards. And even the problem that Karmi Sheli lo natarti, my own vineyard I was not able to look after. They were forcing they were forcing me to look after other people's vineyards. And my own vineyard I wasn't able to care for. Now this darkness, this shchora nivanava, one way of understanding this is that there are different levels of the person. And there are levels which are radiant, lower levels, which are radiant. But there's a higher level, which is dark. And the higher level is an inner dimension which is beyond radiance, and that is some inner dimension which is the real beauty, and that's the real
of
beauty
of the darkness
of the person.
I don't understand.
It's a level where you see there's a level of beauty which can be revealed in terms of brightness, and there is an essence of the person which is beyond that brightness.
But what has it got to do with darkness? Because you're talking about brightness, and this is talking about darkness.
Yes. So the shchora nivanava, I am dark, and that darkness is the real beauty, something beyond light, beyond ordinary revelation. Benot Yerushalayim, O daughters of Jerusalem, I'm telling you that there is a deeper level. Ka'alei Kedar, like the tents of the Bedouin. Ki Yeriot, who have black tents, then as now. Interesting, right? Ki Yeriot Shlomo, like the curtains of Shlomo. Now the curtains of Shlomo suggest something which is very sacred, something very spiritual. And so there is this darkness which is something very intimate. So, but there are different ways of understanding the darkness. Don't look at me in a negative way because I'm dark.
But it's looking, it's saying maybe you're black on the outside but white on the inside. So you're black, so you're external.
Well, you see, in verse 6, it looks like that, that the darkness is only an external thing, and the reason why she's dark is because the sun panned her, because she was forced to work looking after other people's vineyards and wasn't able to care for her own vineyard. But it's as if this darkness is really something very, very beautiful. And the idea of the paradox that our religious life, sometimes what looks like something negative is really something positive. The quality where the person seems to be remote is actually the point at which the person is the most exalted. And it's not a simple equation, getting brownie points. It can be that in the most negative aspect, in fact, that is the greatness of the person. And so there we have the darkness, Shora and Ivanava. There's a long commentary on Shir Shirim by Rabbi Shneur Zalman in a volume called the Ikutei Torah, his Hasidic teachings, and there's one section on Shir HaShirim. So, Likutei Torah, Torah Or, and Likutei Torah, these are two volumes which basically comment on the Seder of the week. And then, at the end of Likutei Torah, it's all about Shir HaShirim. It's all about Song of Songs. One explanation why there were so many discourses on Song of Songs is that Rabbi Shneur Zalman would say a discourse from Song of Songs at a wedding. So whenever there was a wedding, he would say a discourse, and that was usually drawn from Song of Songs. And so there's there a whole explanation, Shora Nivanava, I'm dark and beautiful, as expressing the most exalted aspect of the infinite. Like there's the dark Hebrew letters on the white background. So the white background, we can see it as a radiance, a divine radiance. That's the white background in the Torah. But the dark letters are an even more exalted dimension. That's the darkness which is behind the light. And so when we translate that to the individual, there is also that in the person as well. So then we come to verse 7. Would you like to say verse 7?
Tell me. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that veileth herself beside the flock of thy companions?
Right. Hagidoli, tell me, Sha'ava Nafshi, you who love me. Eicha tireh, where will you dwell? Eicha tarbitz b'tzahareim, where will you be crouching in the afternoon? Shalama eyek otia, why should I be someone who is hidden? Al edrei chaverecha, by the flocks of your friends. In other words, so it's as if she's talking to him. Eicha tireh, yeah, that's in the masculine. Hagidah is in the cohortative. It's not in the feminine. That would be Hagidi. This is Hagidah. Hagidali, she's saying to him, you whom I love, where will you be pasturing? He is a shepherd. Where will you be? Why should I be veiled all the time, standing by the flocks of your friends, the other men? I want to be openly with you. And he says to her, Michael, in verse 8,
Mikey.
Okay, you said Millie.
אם לא תדעי לך היפה בנשים, תאי לך בעקבי הצון, ונאי את גדותייך על משכונות הרועים. If thou know not, thou fairest amongst women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tents. Im lo tedi lach hayafa banashim. If you...
Now, the way in which this is, see, speaking to the Jewish people, or to the Jewish individual, if you don't know, you don't know where to find God, go by the Ikvei Hatzon, the footsteps of the flocks, and pasture your little lambs by the shepherd's tents. So one way that this is explained is, consider your ancestors, who themselves were shepherds, follow their ways, follow the ways of the earlier generations.
Yeah.
So that's the see the other shepherds are like the other nations, and the idea is that we are following in the pathway of our ancestors, and the point is, where do you find God? That's what the question is here. In verse 7, she is saying, I love you, God, but where do I find you? Where am I going to locate you? And the answer is, you'll locate me, you'll find me, you most beautiful of women, you'll find me by your going in the path, the Ikve Hatzon. You see, Ikve implies following something, following the sheep. So Rashi takes this as the as following the pathway that was set out in the.
By Yaakov, maybe connected to Yaakov as well.
Yeah. Where will you be able to pasture and be saved from those who are oppressing you? That you should be among them and you shouldn't, and your children shouldn't be destroyed. So consider the paths of your ancestors, the earlier ancestors, who accepted my Torah and guarded my guarding and my laws. Go in their ways. And also, with the reward for this, you will be able to pasture your young sheep among the leaders of the nations. And then Rashi compares to another verse in Jeremiah which says the same kind of thing. So the question is, where does the individual find God? And the answer is, you find God in the Ikve Hatzot, in the traditional pathways. That's where you're going to find God and be able to survive among all these hostile shepherds. See, there's in the Song of Songs, there's the love of the woman to the man and the man to the woman, and there are also an atmosphere of hostility and of danger as well. So very often there's this echoing of something dangerous, and so that's also part of the picture. So here it's saying, follow in your traditional pathways. Now we then come to the next section. Lususasi berichve paro. Would you like to read that? So,
I have compelled thee, O my love, to the steed in Pharaoh's chariot.
I don't understand that. It's the last one.
The last one on the
it's
first.
It's the last page. On the first. The
yeah,
first
but continues over.
Yeah, it goes on to the back of the page.
Oh, does it?
The pages. No, the pages printed on both sides.
So sorry.
Yes. Yeah. No, but this is verse nine.
And then verse 10 is the top.
Yes. That's right. So there, you are like a horse. Now, this horse in the chariots of Pharaoh. Now Rashi. Yeah, so one way that Rashi explains this is in terms of this comparison, and you see that's just as. Well, I mean, the simple way that the commentators take it is that there are many horses, but you are something exceptional. among these horses. The idea of comparing a person to a horse might seem...
And to a pharaoh horse in particular.
Yeah, but the point is the pharaoh's horses are the best horses. Yes. So do you want to take the next verse, verse 10? Now verse 10, the translation is on the bottom of the first page. So you have to read the bottom of
thy cheeks are comely with circlets, thy neck with beads.
Yes. Do you want to take the next, Yudana?
We'll make the circlets of gold with studs of silver.
Right. Torei zahav naselach. We'll make for you circles of gold in the kudata keser, with studs of silver. It's like a decoration. It's can you go on? Yeah.
While the king sat at his table, Spikenard sent forth its fragrance.
Right. Ad shahamelech bim sibo nirdin natan recho. Marco? Good girl.
My beloved is unto me as a bag of myrrh that lieth betwixt my breasts.
Tzro hamor dodini bein shadai yalim. And then eshkol hakofer dodini becharmei ein gedi. My beloved is to me like a cluster of henna in the vineyards of Ein Gedi. So Ein Gedi, which you probably know, is beautiful oasis on the near the Dead Sea, and this is this beautiful fruit. So it's a sense of beautiful things, and the idea of a source. Let's just take this horse. Okay, the horse is the oddest comparison you might say in terms of our normal way of thinking. Now, horse in Kabbalistic Hasidic thought, a horse represents the way in which something very exalted is transmitted and translated to a lower level. And it's as if the horse is the power to take something of a very exalted level and translate it into another form so that it can move down and become accessible. Now, in terms of our relationship with the infinite divine, what is it that has the power to take divinity and make it something accessible to us? It's the letters, the Hebrew letters. You see, we already had Nagila v'nismacha Bach. We will rejoice in Bach, in you, the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Now, the power of the letters of the alphabet is that they emerge from a very exalted level of the divine, and they become a vehicle, like a horse with a rider. They become a vehicle for a tremendously powerful idea to be transmitted on a lower plane of existence. And that's exactly what the letters of the words of the Torah are doing as they're transmitted to us, coming down into our world. Now, then comes, since there is this relationship with this sort of spiritual teaching which is coming from the divine, then comes the kind of response of this beautification, this being of wearing beads round the neck and of different things with the studs of silver and a tremendous fragrance. While the king is sat at his table, the king representing the divine, what does it mean? B'misibor, there's some way in which the infinite divine is expressing something. And for me, nirdi natan recho, there's this spikenard, as it's translated here, some kind of fragrant quality within the person which reveals its fragrance in relation to the divine. Tzror hamor dodili. And so godliness himself is this quality of a beautiful fragrance like myrrh, which rests between my breasts. It belongs to me. And then Eshkol HaKofer, like a bunch of grapes, this is my beloved. Bechamei En Gedi, from the vineyard of En Gedi. So it's an expression of love which is coming from this communication of intimacy from the divine through the letters of the Torah, bonding and bringing out the most beautiful quality of the person and the Jewish people. And then we come to the last stanza, as it were, in this first chapter. Hinach yafa, would you like to?
Hinach yafa ra'ayati, hinach yafa enayich yunim. Hincha yafe dodi, af na'im, af erseinu ra'anana.
Shaul, do you want to finish?
Torat batenu arazim, ra'aytenu beroshim, no?
Brotim, like it's called in the text.
So what is brotim? Oh, they call brotim, the Cyprus, they call them brotim here.
Yeah. Ah. All right, so let's take the translation. Millie, do you want to read in English? 15.
Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thy eyes are as doves. Should I do the next?
Yeah.
Behold.
Now it goes into the masculine.
Thou art fair, my beloved. Yea, pleasant. Also, our couch is leafy.
And then, korot batim, the beams of our houses, our cedars, and our panels, rahitenu, brotim, our cypresses. Now, this is talking there. The man says to the woman, you are very beautiful, your eyes are like doves. And the point about doves, I think, is their faithfulness. The way two doves,
yes,
will look, yes, at each other, will gaze at each other, and it's the gazing, the girl gazing at the man, the Jew, the individual, the human being, gazing at God in this focused way and with longing and yearning and love. And then, Dodi, you are beautiful. And Arsenu, our pouch, is leafy, ranana. Ranana really means fresh. It says here leafy, but ranana is it's something which is fresh, which has got sap coursing through it. Korot batenu arazim, and the beams of our house are cedars. What house? Is the house which expresses the union of the Jewish people and God. Mm. Which house?
The
Beit HaMikdash. Yeah, that's exactly how this phrase, this verse is understood. So they are speaking of their love for each other, that each one is beautiful, and they are housed in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. And the arsenu, the couch in which they meet, which is Torah mitzvot, has something fresh. It's fresh, it's vibrant, it's living. And where is this beauty really fulfilled? In the Beit HaMikdash, which has got cypresses and cedars and this beauty. So that is the first chapter of Song of Solomon.
Thank you.
You see, there's